Hello and welcome back to the FitCast. My name is Kevin Larrabee and I'm very happy to have a guest on the show that's like really local. And it's like one of those things where, man, I just need to get out to more gyms locally more, especially here in Massachusetts. She just presented in Providence at the Perform Better Summit. Unfortunately, I was not able to attend. I had to bail a little bit early, but I got a lot of great reaction from it on Facebook and Twitter. And I'm happy to have her on the show for the first time. That's Artemis Skentalides.
Yes, I'm very happy to be here, Kevin. Thank you for having me. I know it's true. We have so many awesome coaches locally in Massachusetts. It's we're really, really fortunate.
We were even just talking off the air. Like I had Greg Robbins on the show a couple months ago. I'm saying it right now. I'm claiming that Massachusetts is the power state of strength and conditioning in the country.
It seems like it. I just spent a weekend this past weekend. So Saturday I presented at the Elite Training Workshop at Mike Reinhold's place in Waltham, Mass. And Tony Gentilcore presented, Mike Reinhold presented, Ryan Ketchum. And then the next day I attended Greg Robbins' Optimizing the Big Three shop on powerlifting at Cressy Sports Performance. So it's just awesome that in such a local area that you can get that in one weekend. And there were a lot of people that were at both. There were a lot of people who were at the Elite Training Workshop on Saturday and then went to Greg's workshop.
Sounds like you're getting the hail that I just got half an hour ago.
It's really loud.
Okay, so this is like...
Golf ball size hail now.
Okay, so yeah, about 30 minutes ago at my house, like I was getting golf ball size hail, and now it looks like it traveled south down to you, which is just, it's perfect.
It's great. It's great ambiance for the podcast.
At first I thought you were just like clicking away on the keyboard, but no, it's the like ridiculously crazy weather we just seem to have here in Massachusetts today.
Hopefully it'll pass soon. I can't imagine it'll last that long.
No, I think we'll be good. And like you were just talking about before, like, yeah, it's not, I mean, we got Mike Reinhold here and Tony. I'm sure Tony soon, like within a year, is just going to be presenting on his like thesis for the like Lord of the Rings trilogy or something like that at this point.
And he'll somehow weave in deadlifts.
Sure. It's like Gandalf had to do, you know, he deadlifted 500 before he got into sorcery or something like that. Sorry, I don't know anything about the Lord of the Rings movies. I apologize. But, you know, we got a lot of other good stuff to talk about. So, yeah, like that's really, really great. It's I will say, like, right now, I think the only other state that could compete with us is like maybe California, but it's so big.
Yep.
That, you know.
Yeah, I know. I think for density in terms of size, we definitely have, you know, more. I think we might beat out California in that area.
Yeah, I'm locking it. That's the FitCast award for best state goes to Massachusetts. So we got a lot of stuff to talk about. And, you know, I think the best way to start this is just to do like a little bit of a brief introduction from you about like how you got into this, the whole industry, and what was kind of, I guess, your gateway in your progression to where you are right now.
I started out as a part-time group fitness instructor, specifically with spinning. And it was something, when I was in my 20s, I took my first spin class, and you wouldn't think that spinning could impact a person like that. But I think it was just the atmosphere of going in and having a really great class experience and a really great interaction with the instructor and feeling the instructor impact me and help me to feel like, wow, this made my day better. This makes my life better. This makes me want to come back. And, and I, from there, I wanted to be able to impact people in that way. Given my background as a former ballet dancer and a martial artist, I've always been someone who's been moving, who's been athletic, and I wanted to figure out how to translate that into a job. It just took me a little bit longer than some other people. And so finally, in my late 20s, I started to work part-time as a spin instructor. That led to other group fitness formats. And I love the group fitness energy. A lot of people don't know this about me, but I am actually more of an introvert. But for some reason, I really thrived off the group fitness energy and just having and and touching people in masses like that and helping them to help to inspire them and want to come back and stay fit and stay healthy and just relieving stress in that way. And then eventually after working part-time for about 5 years in the industry, I finally got all my ducks in a row. I had some savings in the bank and I got my national personal trainer certification. I got my first kettlebell certification and I was working part-time at two different gyms as a group fitness instructor, two commercial gyms. And it was just time to make the leap. And I left my office job to work full-time as a personal trainer and group fitness instructor. And then that was it. The rest is history. And then I went on to open at, it was, I want to say 3 years after that, I went to open Start Iron Body Studios with my boyfriend and co-owner, Eric Gann. And now I run Iron Body Studios and I teach strength workshops around the United States. And next year I'll actually be going to Australia with it. So I'm really excited about that with my lift workshop.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So, I mean, definitely it seems like teaching and education is a big driving force for you too.
Yes. I love teaching. Definitely one of the things I found about, I love teaching workshops. I found that as I've grown as a coach and grown as a trainer, it's been great to be able to take that to the level of teaching workshops and really being able to reach out to people outside of my studio and outside of Massachusetts. And it's amazing to me that I have people from Australia and London and even the Philippines who follow my blog and who I can connect with on social media. And now, you know, hopefully Australia is the start of some other international workshops, but be able to meet them in person and teach them in person. I really enjoy that.
That's the great thing about this world we live in today with the internet. It's like with the podcast here, this gets to pretty much go to anyone that has somewhat decent internet connection and seeing how many people that can hit. That's what's so outstanding. It's like, you know, only a 20-hour flight for you to get over there. So
yeah, only. And then there's like when I get there, not only is there the time of the flight of the travel, but then there's the time change. So it'll take me about a week to get there, but it'll be worth it.
Yeah, I've been taking trips to like 7 trips to Japan in the last 3 years, and it's basically like a nap now. You just take a nap and you wake up in Japan, and you just adjust as you go. That's super super cool. So. For people that weren't able to attend in Providence and, you know, partially selfishly for me, what was your discussion about? I got to see a little bit of video and some pictures from it. And I obviously have the handout from Perform Better, but for the people listening, what was the discussion all about?
I talked about helping for coaches and trainers, helping your female clients to strength train, empowering them through strength training. Mm-hmm. So helping them to not be afraid to lift weights, to help to educate them about in mainstream fitness and mainstream media as women, we're constantly bombarded with mainstream media in particular telling us what our bodies should look like and what type of fitness we should do, these female specific type workouts. I think just there's always great examples in the media. For example, just on Friday, I saw this post about Ronda Rousey, and she was in the Huffington Post and she was responding to what people saying that they think her body looks like a man.
Right.
And she laughed. She thinks it's hilarious. She dropped it through a few F-bombs and said, you know, every single muscle in my body is for a purpose. You know, it's true. She's an athlete and every single muscle in her body is for a purpose. And she doesn't look like a man. You look at her body, she looks like a woman. She looks like a very fit woman. And even previous to that, just a few weeks ago, people were tearing apart Serena Williams and the fact that she has a very muscular build and she is very fit and her arms are, you know, there are people out there who think they look like a man's, and no, she just looks like a woman with muscle. And everyone's always dictating like how her body should look like, how Ronda Rousey's body should look like. Mm-hmm. And as women, we deal with that even if we're not elite athletes like that. And even if we're not elite athletes, every single muscle that we have in our bodies are for a purpose as well. If you're a mom, they're for the purposes of being able to lift your children and being able to travel alone with your children and your suitcases, or go to the grocery store and lift your groceries. And it's in every single muscle that we have in our bodies, even if it's not for an athletic purpose, they have a purpose. And there's no one out there should dictate what our bodies should look like, and if we should be doing female specific training, like bar classes. You know, you want to do something that gives you those long muscles. And so it was all about helping coaches and to educate their clients about, number one, why are there these myths? Where do they come from? Mm-hmm. And where do they stem from? And what are the solutions to help to educate your clients to understand that they are myths? And then once you educate them, what can you do to help to encourage them and to really buy into strength training? Because as humans, their exercise is not gender specific. Exercise, we are humans. We are structurally, we have the same skeletons. Things that differ are our sexual organs. And yes, men have more testosterone than we do as women, but we all need to push, pull, hinge, squat. We all need to do the fundamental movement patterns, and that's it. And that's what we should do in our training. And as women, that doesn't mean that since we're women and we have less testosterone, that we should be going and using 5-pound hot pink dumbbells. And that's just not how it works. So the talk was about that, and just, and as personally how my experiences from being, I spent 23 years dancing classical ballet, and that definitely took its toll mentally on me and my body image. And I went through my phases of disordered eating and my different phases of being a cardio queen to try and burn off every single calorie I ate and all of those things. And to transitioning into martial arts and really being empowered through martial arts, and then discovering strength training. Strength training was always available to me, and I was always doing some form of it. And, I know when I was 15, I was a sophomore, and there was a sophomore in high school. It was like the summer, maybe it was the summer after or before my, it was, I think it was the summer before my sophomore year in high school. Terminator 2 came out, and Linda Hamilton and her arms, like I wanted her arms.
Knocking out those chin-ups.
I knew I had to get them through lifting. And so, you know, that was like my inspiration. You know, mm-hmm. I wasn't afraid of muscle. I wasn't afraid of lifting. And so my talk was also a little bit about how my experiences translate to what we as women deal with in general when it comes to those topics, and how I overcame them. And how through transitioning into martial arts, I started to focus on what I could do and not what I could look like, and how through strength training and my journey to train for the Iron Maiden Challenge, that mm-hmm. was something that I discovered how empowering being strong, really physically strong, can be. It's so incredibly empowering. And then how to take those experiences and translate, how I translated them to help my clients feel empowered through strength training, and how they as coaches can do the same. So that was basically the theme of my talk. And in my hands-on, I taught pull-up progressions. And the reason why I like to teach the pull-up is I think that the pull-up, first of all, it's a really challenging movement, and it can be terrifying for a lot of women. You mention it and they look at the bar and their eyes get really big and wide, and they're like, no, I can't do pull-ups, and are you going to make me? And they start having flashbacks of the presidential fitness test, you know?
Yeah, totally.
So helping them to get over through these pull-up progressions that are very palatable, helping them to get over that fear, and how through teaching the pull-up, since it's a body weight movement, if they have this fear of lifting weights, and whether their fear of lifting weights is because they think they're going to get hurt, or if they think they are going to bulk up, that if you present them with a body weight movement, that's a strength movement, or it's one of the ultimate strength, you know, body weight strength movements, that maybe they won't think about, and most of the time they don't think that they're going to bulk up from it, because mm-hmm. it's a body weight movement. You're not handing them a weight. You're just teaching them a movement and how to do it, and to feel confident hanging from a bar and that they're not going to fall down and hurt themselves. So helping them to build self-efficacy through this ultimate body weight strength movement and how it leads to their desire to want to actually go and deadlift a heavy weight or learn the Turkish getup and do a Turkish getup with a heavy weight and things like that.
So, yeah, I want to jump back to the, I guess, like the online discussions about how women look, because that's, I mean, obviously I'm a guy, so it's, I don't really have the same perspective, but my kind of assumption is that all these people, and especially if it's like men saying that whoever it is, you know, pictures online looks, you know, masculine or looks like a man, I can almost guarantee that they're saying that because they're like insecure with the way that they look, or, you know, maybe if it's a guy talking about Ronda Rousey, you know, perhaps, you know, he does not even have the level of strength that she has and is not capable of doing, or not obviously not capable of doing what she's doing, but, you know, not having the time to get to the gym and being able to even look as good as she does. Right. And that's just like the internet. It's just people covering up their insecurities. It's their ability to be the bully back in middle school, but be anonymous with it too.
Online. Yeah. And it's, I think it goes beyond their physical appearance. It's the fact that both these women, what they share in common is that they are very capable women. They're very
successful. Yeah.
Yep. They're very successful in their careers.
They're the best at what they do.
They are. They're the best at what they do. They're outspoken. They're not afraid to stand up for themselves. And they are very, you know, very physically capable. And I think that, and they're very smart. They have the brains to go with it. And I think that can be really threatening sometimes to some people.
I wonder how much of effect the ESPN body issue has had on these discussions, just because almost every year, you know, there is like a woman that is picked out as being like, oh, look at how like fantastic, you know, she doesn't have that ideal like model look that you would see in like an Abercrombie and Fitch catalog or some crap like that. That's what we should be championing. I don't know if you've noticed like any kind of progress with these discussions.
I do think that is, the ESPN body issue is helping, because they do present women's bodies and everyone that they have in the issue as more real. It's just definitely like in all shapes and sizes, and they show muscles and they're not trying to hide any of that. They're trying to emphasize it. So I think it does help on some level.
Yeah. It was funny. I think Allie Reisman, as well, one of the gymnasts, for the US team had very similar line to what Ronda Rousey had, which was like, yeah, like, everything I put into my body is for gymnastics. Everything I do in terms of training is for gymnastics. Every, you know, single muscle in my body is tuned for gymnastics. So, you know, it's just great, because like I mentioned on the show a couple times, but I train middle school kids, and like right now I would say like 70% of my middle school kids they're girls, they're females, and still seeing two things. One, they still do come in with that perception of like, I don't want to lift too much because of the whole bulkiness thing. And still them seeing after a while that like, I had this one 13-year-old girl who she's probably 90 pounds, 100 pounds, maybe knocking out 65-pound goblet squats for 8 reps, and just like seeing how awesome that is, and seeing like once they see that they can do that stuff and that their body is not, you know, turning into a bodybuilder, that's when it starts to click. And that's when you get those like lifelong athletes that, you know, are going to be coming through the door throughout the year and every summer. And that's why I just think we just need to at least get those kids, whether it be, you know, boys or girls, men or women, through the door, just to show them, you know, what they are capable of. And that's what is so powerful about strength training and strength and conditioning.
Yeah. And it's getting them in and, you know, having them take that time to the point that, and it doesn't take long, you know, once, and this goes for kids, you know, middle school kids or the, you know, the 40-year-old client, it doesn't take that much time to be able to mentally have that mental transformation where someone's coming in to do exercise or lift weights in order to physically change their body. And over over that period of time, they actually really start to like how they feel as they're getting stronger, and they're noticing that they're moving better and things seem lighter in their hand when they pick them up, and they're mm-hmm. standing taller. And then people are starting to comment on how great their body looks. And then they stop caring about why they came in there in the first place, which was to look good naked. And they start really thinking like, I just want to get stronger because I really like how I'm, you know, I pick up my child now and my 60, you know, or my 35 pound child, that's more reasonable. And my child feels so much lighter than she did before. And, so yeah, I think like once that starts happening and they realize they actually like the changes that are happening to their body, no matter what they are, then that is really what gets people hooked. And,
I was going to say, like, I totally understand because like up until 28, like my goals were always like, you know, to look as good as humanly possible. And something kind of like switched in the last year where like now I focus a lot more on performance, like goals of like, you know, getting 100 pound, you know, chin up for reps or doing things like getting, you know, like we're talking before the show, like I'm shooting for like a 44 kg Turkish get up, like focusing on more goals like that. As I guess I get more mature mentally and not thinking like, yeah, it's just always about looking great. It's also about feeling great and performance. Yeah. I mean, just like day to day, like your movement quality throughout the day and making sure that you just don't feel like garbage. That is a really good quality to make sure that you can maintain and not just thinking 365 days of the year. Like, yeah, I want 10% body fat.
Yeah. Or you're not like thinking twice about like, I had this, we have this client and she's been training with us. It'll be 2 years this August. And I remember last spring, she was traveling with her three children. Her youngest is 4. I think her oldest is 11. And so she was traveling with her three children to Philadelphia and they were late catching the plane. It was just her and her three kids. And so she said that they had to run across the airport. She had to pick up her toddler, carry her toddler plus whatever her carry-on bag and then her two girls, they all had to run and sprint across the airport to make their flight. And so she said by the time she got
the Home Alone scene. You're basically the Home Alone scene.
Yeah. And she's like, I was just hauling ass across the airport with my three kids and she's like, and I had my Nikita's is her son's name. And she's like, I had Nikita's in my arm and I had all my bags. And she's like, we got to the plane. I got on the plane. We found our seats. And she said, as I was loading the carry-on baggage above into the compartment above, she said, that's when it hit me. Oh my gosh, I just ran across the airport with my toddler and all of my luggage and my two girls. And I didn't even think about getting hurt. Like I didn't think twice about it. Like I didn't think like, can I do this? I just said, I can, like, I just did it. And she said, you know, before I started training with you, I would have stopped and thought, am I going to get hurt? Can I do this? And I didn't even think about that. So I thought that was pretty amazing. So just being able to do stuff like that in life and not even think about it, just being just like going and doing and then realizing afterwards, oh my God, I just did that, you know?
That's like a great definition of like optimum performance. Yeah. Like being able to do like that's your worst case scenario or like, you know, I can only imagine like going to Universal Studios with three kids and needing to like what, like the youngest gets tired. So you get to start carrying them and you get to keep up with the other two as you are going to the next ride. It sounds like worse than an Ironman. I don't know how you do it.
She essentially did like a racked carry sprint with her toddler across the airport.
That's badass. That's cool.
Funny. Yeah. But it's just being able to do things like that. So. And that's where, when you talk about performance goals, I mean, that's another thing that goes with pull-up is that beyond the fact that it's something that can really be empowering once you start to have progress towards, it is a performance goal and it measures both strength and it also, when a person starts to make progress towards their pull-up or gets their first chin-up or first pull-up, that's when great things really start to happen strength-wise and also just in terms of lean, you know, gaining more lean body mass and losing that if there are any fat loss goals, if that person has any fat loss goals. So there are two things happening there with the pull up. So that's another reason why it's such a great movement to train.
Yeah. I've been thinking, and this is just like, this discussion's like sparking a lot of things that I've been thinking of lately, but, like fitness testing goals, like, you know, thinking we've always had like, oh yeah, you should be able to whatever, squat 300, bench 225 and deadlift 400 or whatever. And just thinking of like what tests or what exercises, what movements that you could pick that could then, you know, if they could perform those well, you know, you got a lot of great things going on in terms of movement quality and strength throughout, and not just in, you know, the bench press, being able to bench, but something like a, you know, really heavy farmer carries or Turkish get ups or even chin ups. Like that's like, even if you want to break it down, like that's core control. Like some of the biggest issues I see in like chin ups is people that just have, you know, lack of core control or understanding that they need to actually keep their core tight while they're doing chin-ups and they're not swinging all over the place. Mm-hmm. So you got me writing things down. This is a productive show for me so far. I'm like writing down stuff.
That's one of the biggest things I talk about with the pull-up is that you need to use your core. It's a hang.
Right.
So if you think about it, if you've ever done any trapezing or aerial class or even just played around on the monkey bars too much, if you hang too much or if you hang and you haven't done it in a while or ever, your abs will be sore. Mm-hmm. And that is because tremendous core strength is required for the pull-up and required to hang. So it's about honing in. It's about building that core strength and being able to hone in on it and get that tension going and using it for your pull-up.
And I'm going to apologize. There's the thunder's back here where I live too. So, you know, this might be a really good podcast also to just keep on if you need to go to sleep and you want that ambient noise in the background of thunder and hail and rain. I know
it just stopped here. So it's moving out now.
It's just doing like crazy circles here. So let's get a little bit more in depth into how you do like to teach the chin up and progress it, just because you know, again, that's one of the things that, like at NBSC, we still kind of run into issues with how to progress that with, whether it be athletes or clients that are coming in. Obviously, like the way that we progress it is with super bands that are attached to the bar that we're going to be pulling up to. So we can deload by putting the band in our knee or in our foot. And then we've also been messing around with like putting the band around, like the J hooks on the rack to allow for different ways to deload, but that is just all over the place. It's really hard to keep track of like where the, you know, the J hooks were and stuff like that. So, I'm really curious, like how do you like to teach and, you know, progress that movement, with men and, you know, if it's different for women as well?
Well, I teach it the same for both men and women, and it just depends on where you start. It depends, or how quickly you move past step one. It depends on what their experience is with pull-ups. Mm-hmm. So if you have someone coming in who has done pull-ups before and they've lost their pull-up, or if they've done pull-ups before, but they haven't learned pull-ups from with me or at Iron Body Studios, because we have a set way that we do it, I'll teach them. I start out, whether they've done them before or not, I teach the hollow position on the floor. So I teach them what the hollow position is, because that helps them to maintain maximal tension and really engage their core for the pull-up. So I'll teach it on the floor. I'll give them a dowel to hold overhead and use as an imaginary pull-up bar. And if it's someone who is brand new to pull-ups, I'll have them practice the hollow position for say about 2 weeks or so, and then on the floor, and then I have them take it to the bar and practice it with some straight arm hangs on the bar. Oftentimes, if you have someone who has done pull-ups before, I'll have them come in, I'll show them the hollow position, we'll practice it on the floor, and I'll have them take it right to the bar with some band-assisted pull-ups so that they can, because they're not afraid of getting up on the bar. Like, they've done it before, and maybe it's been a while, but it won't take them that long to get over. If they're feeling a little intimidated, it's not going to take them that long to get back to being up on the bar. So I'll teach the hollow position, and you can teach it with there's a two-legged hollow where you have both legs off the ground. And then sometimes that can be really intense for people. So there's a modification you can do with one foot on the ground, a one-legged hollow. And it's still, it, it serves the same purpose. You're still able to get that isometric hold with your abdominals and figure out how to hold tension with your trunk and engage your lats as you're pulling down on the dowel or your imaginary pull-up bar. So I'll start there and then I'll take it to the bar. So if it's someone who's brand new, we'll go to the bar after a few weeks and then I'll have them practice some straight arm hangs in the hollow position. And I'll have them do, and depending on how comfortable and how strong they are hanging from the bar, usually people can hang for about like 10 seconds or so starting out with a straight arm hang. And then build that up to sets of 30-second hangs. And in the meantime, there's other things you want to work as well as accessory movements. I think some really great core accessory movements are rollouts, so TRX rollouts, and then progressing to – I like to start with the TRX rollout and progress to the ab wheel rollout. I know – I think I read somewhere maybe Mike Boyle, he starts different. I don't know if he's – I can't remember. But I like to start with the TRX rollout and then progress to the ab wheel rollout. So that's an accessory movement that you can work. I think if you have someone who's brand new and you have them working on hollows, they can also be working on some TRX rollouts mm-hmm. on some other days. And then after they get comfortable with a straight arm hang, I'll have them go into a flexed arm hang, an underhand grip flexed arm hang. And so they would have to get up onto a platform that they can either step up to the bar or jump up, or, you know, I'm there, I can give them a little bit of help mm-hmm. and hold that flexed arm hang. I've had people start out with flexed arm hangs and sometimes like 5 seconds is all they have in them because it's really challenging to hold totally. Your body weight up. So, and that's okay. You just work with that. You just work with like 3 sets of, you know, 5 seconds and just have them work on that and just build up time. I don't have people do more than 30-second flexed arm hangs. I think 30 seconds is plenty of time.
For those like progressions, would you go for like 2 weeks or 3 weeks? Or was there like a specific like time that you're looking for that hang before you go to the bent arm?
It's more of comfort. I think it's more of like comfort on the bar. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it definitely is upper body strength too. So, yeah. I would say for the straight arm hang, you can have them, if they're making some significant progress with their upper body strength, that I would say after about 2 weeks, you can have them progress to a flexed arm hang. And so along with the TRX rollout, working TRX rows during that time that they're doing straight arm hangs and hollows, having them work TRX rows and hand walkouts, just training that trunk stability, mm-hmm. those are really helpful movements to help build that up. Because they're probably not at a point where they can do push-ups, so the hand walkouts will address that. It'll address trunk stability for the pull-up, trunk stability for push-ups, and just that upper body strength that they'll need when they get to the flexed arm hang. And the TRX row will also address that as well.
Gotcha.
And then I'll have them go to flexed arm hangs. And when they're ready to go to flexed arm hangs, around that time, they're probably ready for some band-assisted pull-ups. So you can program in over the course of the week. Say you see them, you know, 3 times a week. You could have them do flexed arm hangs once a week and then band assisted twice a week. Mm-hmm. As far as the band assisted, I had someone ask me. So when I teach band assisted pull-ups, I have people put their feet or 1 foot in the band. And the reason for that is because it helps them to hold their hollow position while they're in the band. And I have heard, I taught a workshop, Superhuman Strength Training at Perform Better back in May. And I had someone ask me about the band assisted on the J hooks for the pull up. Mm-hmm. And it's not wrong. I think it's fine. It works, but I personally don't like to do band assisted pull ups that way because it's really hard to hold the hollow position in that way.
I'm totally with you like that. I mean, this is something that we've kind of been messing around with, but like, and again, like I've a completely different, I'm coming from a completely different place because like with the middle school kids, like they usually are going to need more assistance anyways. But, mm-hmm. You know, just in terms of like, even just like logistics of using the band across the J hooks, I think it makes sense in like a personal training environment where you can maybe do one-on-one and you can have that, you know, you can take the care of like watching the person do them the whole time, or even like adjusting it based on like their progression. But even for me, like I still think for the most part, we've just been hooking them up onto the, you know, the bar that we're pulling up to, the anchor point.
Yep. And it's all about, you know, people, I know there's like a, there, you sometimes you see debates written about like, are band, do band assisted pull-ups work or not? And I've been using them for years and I have lots of success with my clients getting their first pull-up, but it's because with that, they're with the band assisted pull-ups, they are also training flex arm hangs and they're training those accessory movements. So rollouts and also eccentric pull-ups are great too. So once you have someone who is doing band assisted and flex arm hangs and the eccentrics, I mean, I think you need to get them, have them build up some hang, like flex arm hang strength before you start working in some eccentric pull-ups. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that could take like 3 to 6 weeks, you know, I would maybe give them like 6 weeks time and then you can start to work in eccentrics once a day. And, I think that I've seen for a couple of my clients really be a game changer for their mm-hmm. pull-up and really help them to get their pull-up. Another movement I really like, and I have all of this stuff I have, I've written about it on my blog. So I have different that goes through, you know, pictures and videos and programming for all the movements I'm talking about. But one of the things I really like are the hanging leg raise. Mm-hmm. And I really like, even if you can't get your toes to the bar, it doesn't matter. Like if you're hanging and you're going through that dynamic, it's a dynamic hang. So like a pull-up, it is a dynamic hang. You're hanging, but instead of pulling your body over the bar, you're engaging your core and you're pulling down on that bar with straight arms to engage your lats, to lift your legs to the bar. So you're using the muscles that you need for a pull-up, your core and your lats to pull up, and you are maintaining tension like you need in a pull-up. You're just moving a different part of your body. So I really like the hanging leg raise a lot, even if you can just get to 90 degrees or even just below 90, that you're still going through the motions of using those muscles that you would need in a pull-up. And if the person is not ready to hang from the bar, and this is something that they can do before they're hanging from the bar, I should say. You can do it as a floor leg raise. And the floor leg raise, you can either do it by setting up a barbell on the J-hooks on a rig or a rack and have the person set themselves up under the bar and reach overhead. And just make sure that they have straight arms. So their head is probably like right before the bar and their arms are straight. And then pull, you want to have them start from a hollow position. So from their shoulders to their hips are rooted on the floor. And even their head is on the floor too. But their legs are off the ground and they have their hips tucked under a little bit and they're in that hollow position. So you want them to start from a hollow position and actively pull down on the bar with straight arms. Engage their lats, use their abdominals, get that tension going, and work to pull their legs to the bar that's behind them. Does that make sense? I know it's hard to like visualize that as I talk about it, but so you can do the hanging leg raise on the floor that way. You can also do partner assisted, so you could get behind your client with a dowel or a really super light body bar, just something that won't break in half, and you can pull back as they pull in the opposite direction. So you're pulling in opposing directions as they're moving their legs up to the bar. So that is, and that's something that you can do before they go to the bar. That's around the time that they're working through hollows and TRX rows and TRX rollouts, you can have them work through floor leg raises. And then once they're ready to take their pull up to the bar and start to work on some flex arm hangs, and you can have them take their leg raises to the bar and have them start to do some hanging leg raises. So I think that's a really good accessory movement too. That goes along with the rollouts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a pretty good attack plan. Like, yeah, that's some stuff that you can play around with if you haven't hit that body weight chin up for sure.
Yeah.
Let's pause for a second. This is where I just like to say thank you to everyone that is supporting the show through Patreon at patreon.com/thefitcast. There you can support the show. It's super easy to set up, and you can support the show starting at just $1 per episode. So really $4 per month if you want to go in at that rate. And even if you want, you can be even more awesome and support it really as much as you want per episode. But those Patreon people that are jumping on there and helping support the show, they are what is making it possible for me to continue to do these shows. Like even for this episode, we're recording a little bit ahead of time because I got a bunch of travel coming up in the next couple of weeks. So thank you to everyone that is supporting the show through Patreon. Again, it's patreon.com/thefitcast. Really means a lot if you can jump on there. If you think that this show is worth the time that I'm putting into it to produce it, and of course all the costs that go along with having it show up in your iPhone or your Android or however you listen to this every single week. I really appreciate it. So hopefully you do too, and you take the time to jump on there and support the show. Thank you so much for everyone that does. So let's talk about the Turkish getup, because selfishly, like this is the time in the show where I'm going to selfishly ask my own question. So I'm pretty comfortable knocking out a 40 kg getup on both sides. It's not perfect. It's pretty clean. Uh-huh. Obviously better on my right side than my left, but I just purchased, thanks to the fantastic sale at performbetter.com, a 44 kg bell. And that is my new mountain that I'm trying to climb, is to get a getup on each side. And like it showed up yesterday, and just looking at it is intimidating as hell. Like it just looks so much bigger than the 40. Yeah. But we're talking like what, 9 more pounds and, you know, roughly let's call it like 15 more percent weight that I'm used to doing. So, if you have someone that is really at that, you know, that ceiling for me might be that 40 and I'm trying to get to that 44. How would you recommend I go about attacking that and getting ready to attempt it?
Well, there are two things you want to think about in terms of one, program design, and what are you doing in your program, which I'll answer in a second. I'll give some suggestions in a second. And two, also just set up with your getup, like getting into that heavy, as you get heavier in weight with your getup, your setup really is really, really important, and technique is really important.
Okay.
So as far as program design, one thing I discovered that was a game changer for me when it came to symmetrical strength and getup strength, and just like I said before, symmetrical strength that ended up translating beyond my getup strength to other movements, is a rep scheme of having one day a week where I trained three sets of three consecutive reps on each side with a getup. And I remember when I first started out, I started with a 16 kilo. And I remember my left side, it was just, there was a huge difference between my right and my left side. So my right side, I could easily get through the three sets of three. And within each set, you don't want to lower the bell down. So you're going to come all the way up, come all the way down, and not lower the bell. Like keep it up.
Keep and that bell press.
Back, yep. And keep going back and go into that second rep. So okay. Right side was fine. I remember my left side, the first set was okay, but then the second set started to get hairy. So, but then, you know, after some time, both sides started to match each other. And I noticed a really big jump in my get up strength on both sides. And so I think that's a, you know, having one day a week that you're doing that with working through a lighter weight, three sets of three, and just working that strength endurance. Because you have to think about it. So your average get up takes 30 seconds to do. Mm-hmm. With a heavier weight, it might take a little bit longer. So you're going to want to have more strength endurance. You want to make sure you build up that strength endurance so you can get through that time under tension with that heavier weight. The other thing that is really, really important when it comes to heavy weight. So my max get up is a 57 pound bell, is 30 kilos. And I'm not a big person. I have really small bones. I mean, the thing is like massive on my arm. And I don't do it regularly, but I can do it. Like, I have done it. And it's taking the time to, when you are on your side and you're getting that bell and bringing it over into your stomach. And Kevin, so if I can do a 30 kilo get up, you can do a 44. Okay.
Well, it always helps when you're getting called out on a podcast listened to by 15,000 people. Thanks.
It's going to happen.
Thanks.
So you know, just taking that time to make sure that it's on the right place on your forearm. So I don't know how much have you played with finding that sweet spot to have the bell on your forearm. And also you want to have that bell handle really low in the heel of your hand. Okay. So really deep in the crease of your thumb. And when you find that sweet spot, even if it's a really heavy bell like that, it's going to feel like it's an extension of your arm, like it's a part of your arm.
Okay.
And I think it's playing with finding what that, where that place is, because you really want to maximize that with the heavy weight. And I also find that, you know, with get-ups, yes, you want to be neutral, but I think it's great to start out a little bit beyond neutral, like almost a little bit flexed as you, when you get that bell in that sweet spot on your forearm in the low in the heel of your hand and you bring it in and then you press it up. You want, you know, you're in your sweet spot because your wrist is going to be a teeny tiny bit flexed, but it's not going to look weird. It's going to look like it's in a really strong, solid position.
Gotcha.
So I think that's huge. It's just making sure that you're tapping into the sensory receptors on your forearm, in your hand, and you're getting that bell wedged on your arm.
Okay. Yeah, I got some. I'm taking notes. Give me a second. All right. So, because this is like, it's one of those things where it's a lot more. It's obviously like a little bit more intimidating of a lift because it's not even like a deadlift where you can just like you can drop the weight or like a chin up where you can just like let go of the bar.
Yep.
You have a 100-pound bell hovering above your face.
Yep.
In your head. And it's a pretty solid object that would cause some damage if it came down the wrong way. So,
yeah.
Okay. So I got those. So the second thing that I always like run into, and we'll kind of wrap it up with this, is like rolling onto that elbow.
Yeah.
That's where I always like, I would like when I get heavier, that's when like the miscalculations come in and I might have that kettlebell too far forward or not forward enough. Like I always have like a trouble trying to find that sweet spot too.
Yep. And that was the other thing I was going to say is, you know, the hardest part is going to be rolling up,
right,
and then controlling that roll down. So, if you're able to, have you practiced bringing the 44 in and pressing in, and are you able to secure it with a single arm overhead laying down? Are you able to do that?
I have not even okay. attempted it yet. I literally just got it yesterday. So I did some swings today. That was my first, I broke it in a little bit.
So yeah, you definitely just want to play with like finding that spot with the bell, bringing into your stomach, seeing where you're at in terms of being able to secure it in that initial position after you press it with both hands and let go with one and see, you know, how can you secure it and then practicing that, and then practicing the roll up. So yeah, the roll up, that is really hard. So that's when you want to tap into the leg that's bent, the foot that's on the ground. You want to use your butt. Like you really want to use your butt and that heel drive and really drive your heel into the ground, engage your glute. And I find it helpful just hold your breath. it's just like if you were doing a max lift,
totally,
you're going to hold your breath as like you're going to brace and hold your breath as you are going through that lift. Until you find that you're at a point where you're like, okay, I'm past my tough part, so I can exhale or I can go into my next breath. So that initial roll up, you want to inhale and hold your breath and get through that roll up. And use your legs. Definitely use your legs. And it's all about, I find that one of the hardest things with the heavier bells for get-ups is just getting comfortable having that extra weight on your arm. So things that you can do, like practicing the roll-up or just practicing bringing into your stomach and the two-hand press, just getting comfortable with having that extra weight on your arm. Even like some cleans with it will help. Just cleans or some racked carries, just really, you know, just really getting comfortable with it.
Okay. All right. I got some I got some progressions to use. I got some work to do. Okay. I have some direction now. Thank you. Because it's scaring the crap out of me to think about, you know, and it really should. Like, I knocked out a 40 like it was nothing. Like, the 40 is really nothing. It's just like literally the size of the 44 just looks way bigger.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why, but it's just like that next size up that just makes it look very, very difficult. But
well, you have to get over that mental fear too.
I know. Yeah.
You can't be scared when you're doing a get up. You cannot have that fear because that will totally screw you up. So maybe getting some more time in with the 40 with some singles, mm-hmm. and, you know, talking yourself out of that fear and just being like, I can do this. Like, I know I can do this because I can do the 40 very comfortably for this many singles. Getting to the point where you can do a double, you can do a set of two with the 40. You know?
I know I can do, I'm pretty close to being able to do, I can do a double with a 36 on my right side. The left side, again, like you said, is kind of lacking a little bit, but mm-hmm. I'll try upping the volume and doing those triples and do that and just kind of build up a little bit of, like, sounds like I just need to build up some volume to try to get ready for that attempt.
I would say in addition to that set of three, find a day that you do like three sets of two
mm-hmm.
with another weight. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I got some homework to do. You guys out there, you got some pro tips on how to knock out some chin-ups, some get-ups. We got some really good discussions today about just the craziness of society in these days and body image. And I think that's really cool stuff to talk about. But before we wrap up, where can people find your stuff? Is the best place at your main website, or do you have a separate website from the gym?
I do. So the gym website is ironbodystudios.com, but my blog and all of the information for my lift workshops, my strength workshops are on ironbodybyartemis.com.
Gotcha.
So all that info is there. And on the blog, I have lots of info about pull-ups and pull-up progressions and I'm not sure what I have about get-ups. I have some stuff on there about get-ups. So
sweet. Well, you can also check out one of those workshops. And if you want, you can follow her on Twitter at IRNBDY by Artemis. And I'll have all that stuff in the show notes in case you're driving. So,
and I'm on Instagram too, Iron Body by Artemis. Yeah. There aren't a lot of Artemises, so I'm pretty easy to find on social media.
still a pretty, pretty badass name.
So yeah.
Not bad. All right. Well, that is going to do it for this episode of the FitCast. I would really appreciate it if you do subscribe to the show through iTunes. If you enjoy it, submit a review on there. And like I mentioned before, you can support the show at Patreon. That's patreon.com/theFitCast. And that's going to be it for this week. Artemis, thank you so much for coming on. It was great to talk. And thank you for all the tips on how to attempt this new PR for the getup.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me. And we survived a hailstorm, so.
Totally. The sun, and literally, like, you heard it before, but the sun is out right now.
I know. It's crazy.
So the gods have been good to us to survive one more day.
Yep.
Thank you for that as well. Fun. I'm gonna party hard until the sun comes up. The music feels so good.